Hello and welcome to episode 28 of the 51-yard line, taping this on a lovely Monday evening in Southern California. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Tyler Berry. To my left, the incorrigible Drew Willers.
I am so excited, guys. It is well afternoon, and I've had lots of coffee, and football's back.
Yep.
To my other left, the pride of the East Coast, Christian Schneider.
Are you ready for some football? I know I am.
And of course, to my third left, the man, the myth, the legend, Stephen A. Cravens.
Let's get down to it.
Guys, football is indeed back, and glorious day to be alive. I, for one, felt better when I woke up this morning, except for my glaring hangover, but what are you going to do?
Get over it and move on.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, because that's our next 26 Sundays.
Speaking of
being hungover on Monday morning.
Speaking of getting over things and moving on, Steve, I think it's probably the conversation the Niners brass had with old Alden Smith last week in a jail cell before they decided to release him.
He's got to go to jail. That guy, he has to go to jail. They don't serve brews in jail.
More's the pity.
Fucking idiot. Total moron. You got Trent Baalke talking about contract extension 2 days before you decide to get shit-faced. Wants to pay you up the ass, dude. All you have to do is behave. That's all you had to do. That's all you had to do. Yeah. You're a millionaire. An Uber.
I mean, I'm with you. I'm totally with you. I mean, I'm gonna take the good cop role for this just because, I mean, he's an alcoholic. He's clearly an alcoholic. It's not a choice. He's got a problem.
He's got more problems other than that, though.
No, I got you. But like
psychological.
There's something wrong with him. We're thinking about this rationally.
Kid's sick in the head.
He has a mental problem, mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, prison, man, whatever. He definitely needs to check into rehab immediately.
Again.
But I mean,
that's why he probably won't do prison time. Right. They'll mandate him to go to rehab, which is good, but. It's
hit him with a massive fine. You know he's got it.
That officially caps the worst offseason I've ever seen.
Oh, it's probably not done yet, man.
It's
probably not done yet.
I've been around and I've seen some truly, truly shitty offseason. Things that have happened that are beyond your control. Mm-hmm. Oh, the one that jumps out at me as a Vikings fan is Corey Stringer dying in training mm-hmm. camp due to heat exhaustion. Ugh. Felt like that just sort of set the tone for what was going to be a wildly disappointing year. Then there was the Love Boat Lake Minnetonka thing. That was bad. So you're all over, you know, late night talk shows for the wrong reason. But you lose your defensive leader, your veteran presence, who's been just an absolute cornerstone for that franchise. Then you lose your next up-and-coming superstar, supposedly. I mean, Chris Borland looked like the real deal.
Oh, yeah.
Now you lose Alden Smith. Your left tackle retires. You lose a head coach. That's the worst offseason a team has ever had.
Well, it's like that for the life of me, I can't remember who wrote it, but there was that article that said, you know what? These things happen, but they don't happen all at once. Usually when players retire, it's one by one. You know, a coach will stick around for a while. He'll leave. Maybe an offensive coordinator will leave, get a head coaching job. It doesn't always happen all at once like this. But again, like Tyler and I were talking about this the other day, it kind of had to happen eventually. All those superstars were on the wrong side of 30.
Yeah.
So I'm not happy about it. I still think they had a lot to contribute. Frank Gore, Willis, whoever. This is officially the beginning of a new era in San Francisco, whether we like it or not. It's the beginning of a new era.
That's what I was going to ask you, Steve. I mean, just looking at this right now, I mean, this summer has got to be the low point of the 49er franchise, right? I mean, I don't think they hit lows like this with Singletary. I can't think of the last time the Niners were just this bad, both as just like in just their preseason situation.
Yeah, I mean, again, who knows how we're actually going to play down the stretch? We might win some surprising games, yeah, but as of right now, without a single down being played in the regular season for the 49ers, yeah, this is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's a storied franchise for decades, and I mean...
Yeah, and I'll say just two more things about this, because I don't really want to talk about it too much, but we did draft Eli Harold in the third round, apparently as a failsafe, just because front office did not trust Alden at all.
Smart.
They wanted him there to learn from Alden, not necessarily take his presence right away, but with recent events, it's gone from being, hey, why don't you learn from this guy, to, okay, we need you to produce now. Get out there and bust your ass. That is exactly what has happened. The morning of when practice got delayed, it went from being, hey, observe this guy, learn from him, talk to him, to being like, get out there right now and start kicking some ass. And second thing is, Drew and I were talking about this just a little bit before, but the shift from wanting Tom Sula to fail from a lot of 49er fans to now they just want to see him succeed. Having this guy to deal with the worst offseason quite possibly in NFL history, at least that's what we've been hearing on ESPN and NFL Network, and seeing how genuine he is and how much he really wants to win and how much his players, you know, love the guy, it's gone from him wanting him to fail to wanting him to succeed. The reason they wanted him to fail is so it could blow up in Jed York's face. Everybody's pissed off when Jim Harbaugh gets, you know, let go, especially because of all the games he won. You give him a hard time, whatever. Fans are pissed off. They want to see the new guy fail on purpose so that way it blows up in front of the powers that be. Now with this, they just want to see the guy succeed because it's truly, it's not fair to judge the guy
really
off this.
Isn't.
I mean,
at
what
this point, it's pretty obnoxious.
If he had retained, let's say Patrick Willis retires, let's say Chris Borland stays. Let's say they keep Frank Gore. Let's say Parrish Cox stays. Let's say Justin Smith stays. You'd be better off judging him with a roster that can actually compete, and not only compete, but can probably still put a big whooping on whatever team they're playing. With this team, with this roster, especially on defense, you cannot judge this man or Mangini or Chris, yeah, you probably could, but as far as Mangini and Tom Sula, it's not fair. It is absolutely not fair to do this. I don't think any coach should be judged, especially on his first rookie season as the head coach on that roster. So I hope we win just enough games where, you know, the fans can recuperate a little bit from the offseason. You know?
I think Tom Sula can essentially, I mean, I'm sure there's a much better way to put this, but I think he can save his first season if they can come out and execute offensively. And Kaepernick can show that he actually made real growth and real in proved that when he applied himself specifically to becoming a better passer. If you can do that and win in those types of ways, like if they're losing games because they're making tons of mental errors and they're not taking care of the football, I could see Tom Sula losing his job. But if they execute and they do all the little things right, and they're just overmatched because they're young and inexperienced, I think it would be pretty unfair to can Tom Sula.
I mean, give him
given the circumstances.
Let him draft another class, for God's sake. Let's see what he can do with some.
Yeah, let
him
bring
a reloaded team.
Because now he doesn't even have Harbaugh's core group.
Right. I mean, I agree it would be wrong to judge him off this season, but I'll go back to what I said, what was it, 5 months ago on this show, that I'm still not 100% convinced he was ever their long-term option. I was still never convinced, however this season went down. And let's be honest, you were saying from the get-go you didn't expect anything better than a 500 season. I'm not convinced he has a job next year, rain or shine. I don't know if it really matters. He very well might be the long-term option, but it just seemed like, and I no mark against him, but it just seemed like such an uninspired pick after firing the guy that got this particular 49ers team to where they were. It just never made any sense to me, really.
Right.
Again, not a knock against the guy. He could be a fantastic coach.
Yeah, we haven't seen shit
exactly
yet,
but I was never convinced that they even made it seem like he was their long-term option.
If there are coaches available, you know, next season, that
which there will be
that
it's the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, if there's coaches next year who are really, you know, beyond qualified to, you know, take this team back to greatness, I mean, yeah, you're probably right. He'll probably be gone. But for his sake, for all the negativity and all the bullshit he's had to put up with this offseason, all the questions he's had to answer in the flaming, I really hope he wows a lot of people and just like, wow, okay, so maybe this guy just wasn't a political hire. Maybe he actually does know what he's talking about. Maybe he is a great coach. But again, let's say someone like, well, Mike Tomlin just signed an extension, so I don't know, just a coach that's, you know, taken their team to the playoff multiple times and won games. Let's say if they're available, like, sorry,
Marvin Lewis.
Lewis could.
Let's say what I've been calling for years finally happens, and they go to the playoffs. The Bengals go to the playoffs again, and they lose in the wild card, and he's canned. Which, after 13 years, it's probably the right choice at that point.
The great almost.
He goes. That would be a great pick for the 49ers.
Defensive oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Good at working
Rob
with
Ryan.
Good at dealing with
God
young
knows.
Brutal.
No, I can't believe that Rex
Keep
Ryan
Tom
was
Sula
on the market.
In that case.
Yeah, no, yeah. I can't believe Rex Ryan was on the market. I can't believe Dan Quinn was on the market. Can't believe Adam Gase was on the market. Can't believe that Mike Holmgren reached out to the organization to.
That's
a
shocker.
And that's why, yeah. like,
that he
it just never made. That's why it never made sense to me. All these high profile guys reach out or take meetings with your organization, and you barely give any of them the time of day, and you settle on an unproven head coach. Like,
I'm not surprised.
It just never made sense. It just never made sense to me. And it never made sense that. Like, clearly they want a coach they can mold into their own, like, into the image they want. But why would you pick someone from Harbaugh's tenure to do that with? That's I don't get it. I just think they weren't wanting to go with one of these column. I mean, the majority of those guys are, like, coaching or will be probably coaching legends in the future, and none of them were going to change their mentality just for Jed York.
Well,
and it seems to me that Jed York didn't want a guy who wasn't going to be a yes man at this point.
Right. Dan Quinn was not going to San Fran. Dan Quinn wasn't leaving Seattle just so he could play Seattle twice.
Adam Gase was very close, though, apparently. Adam Gase.
Gase, I'm not surprised about. But Dan Quinn was never going to. I would have that would have really shocked me. It would have been a really interesting storyline, but he's not going from Seattle to go play Seattle twice, especially with the state that the Niners are in. So
well, remember when the coaches were on the market, this hadn't happened yet. None of this had happened yet. Willis was still on, Borland was still on, all these guys were still on,
Gore
was still on. Everybody, the team was very much intact,
but they were still coming off of a really down year.
Yeah, well, a lot of controversy, a lot of drama, a lot of bullshit stuff. But the only reason I know of that they did hire Tom Sula because the players fucking love the guy. They adore that guy.
And hopefully that's enough to...
That they want to play for him,
yeah.
You know? Like, I mean, that. Hopefully they love him.
Hopefully that's
so
enough
much.
That gives him a job for more than 365 days.
I hope that that's the case. I hope that they love him that much that they really go out and they really play their ass off for him because they don't want to see him go down the tubes because... He's got a hell of an opportunity here. I mean, the head coach of the 49ers, I mean, that's a dream job for anybody. So, unfortunately, it's under circumstances that, I mean, do you think Belichick could pull off a winning season with what's going on? Or what has happened?
Say.
What
I
could
mean, like,
still
you know,
be happening?
I mean, but you never know. I mean, you look at Patriots Belichick and you think, yeah, absolutely he could. But then
you look
Cleveland
at Browns.
Cleveland Browns Belichick and he totally couldn't. So, you know, you do have to have some personnel. And right now the 49ers are just a bag of mixed nuts, man. They just don't add up. Yeah. I don't see a functional team right there. I don't think any coach can make these guys work.
Mm-mm. Well, whatever.
It's rebuilding for them.
It's rebuilding.
All right. Let's move on. Before we get into our major topic for the evening, I wanted to talk about something that came up just this morning. Steve Smith Sr. has announced that he is going to play the 2015 season, and then he's done. He's retiring. What do we think?
I really wish a lot of people on the Niners did that.
Yeah.
Chris Borland.
I mean, I guess going off of what Steve's saying, I don't really know. Like, I don't play professional football. I haven't played it for that long, and I don't know even – I don't even have a single iota of an idea of what the physical and mental toll is, especially to be linebackers. Plus, they both retired with plenty of time left in the offseason so the Niners could get their shit together. It's the left tackle that retired that Anthony Davis you should be pissed about. But I can't really, as an outsider looking in, I can't really get on guys for that. And I'm sure, we don't know. It's very possible Jed York could have had an idea this was coming. We don't know if Willis reached out and was like, hey, I'm having these thoughts. I mean, if York was blindsided, he'd come out and be like, I was completely blindsided. But I don't. So I don't think it's really super applicable. But Steve Smith is a baller.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Smith, I mean, he's one crappy bastard, but he is an incredible receiver, you know, brought a lot of toughness to his teams in Carolina and for that 1 year at the Ravens. I mean, he brought an edge, and sometimes you need a receiver who's going to, you know, really drive the rest of the team.
It's sad because you know I mean, maybe not, but probably this has to have something to do with, I mean, it's clear he was pretty heartbroken about the snub from the Panthers.
Oh, totally. You have it's bullshit.
To, you have to think him not finishing his, being like, knowing that he's not going to finish his career a Panther,
yeah,
probably expedited his, is going to expedite his exit from the NFL a little bit sooner than we would have thought, because he's not injury prone.
He said it to say, he goes, I feel, oh, I mean, he's a badass. I remember that one play was like the last game of the season. The Panthers didn't have anything to play for, and he broke his arm catching a touchdown pass. Like,
yeah.
He just shattered it and didn't even like wince. I mean, that guy could play a long time.
Yeah,
but,
he's a brick.
But, you know, and it, you think about Carolina, I can't name you, like, they became an expansion franchise in what, 95?
Mid-90s.
Mid-90s? Yeah. They were in the Super Bowl by the end of the decade.
Oh, yeah, played Patriots right down to the wire.
And
they
it was
beat us if their kicker hadn't screwed up on that last kickoff.
And, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, shit on guys like Jake Delhomme. I mean, Delhomme was wildly inconsistent, but had some good years,
sure,
some solid years.
2003, that was a darn good year.
Absolutely. But I, to my knowledge, nobody has put that new franchise on the map more in a... I mean, outside of beating the shit out of his own teammate in a training camp, has really handled himself with class.
He doesn't get in trouble off the field. He does, yeah.
Which is so funny because he's got such a badass image.
Oh, absolutely.
But not like, you know, a rule breaking image.
No,
you know, he's just a hard ass. But he doesn't. You don't hear about domestic abuse allegations. You don't hear him unloading on. Mm-hmm. You know, there was the one incident. But, you know, fighting practice happens in the NFL. It's a violent sport.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's, you know, he's a classy hard ass, you know, and he did a good job for his team. I remember watching the last game he played last year, you know, a divisional game in Gillette Stadium.
Yeah.
He was a class act, you know, shook hands at the end. And I got to say, a lot of his Ravens teammates weren't as classy.
Well,
even though they don't talk like he does.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, the guy walks the walk and talks the talk. He's a great player. And I feel sorry for him that he never had a truly great quarterback. I mean, Cam Newton's got potential, but I don't see him being a great quarterback. Jake Delhomme had one great year, but fell apart afterwards.
And he's all of 5'9".
Oh, yeah. You look at the dude, and, you know, if you pass him on the street, you probably wouldn't think he's a football player.
And now you look at him, and you think of his hands and his just absolute proficientness and crispness running routes, and he's just the embodiment of what, you know, an NFL receiver should be. But there was a time where that dude was taking punts back, kicks back.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the raw athleticism of the kid when he came out was pretty underrated.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and you could tell, like, I remember the year after they went to the Super Bowl to play the Patriots,
yeah,
they were playing Green Bay on Monday night in the opener, and he tore his ACL. But came back and balled it out. But I remember him being carted off of the field and him, like, having a towel over his head and just crying, sobbing. Like, he loves the game of football.
Played
and
a lot of passion.
And he cried. He played his first season outside of Carolina, the team that drafted him. And he was still shedding tears in the locker room in Baltimore. He was devastated. He wanted so bad to get back to the top and try to play for another ring.
I'll tell you something. I mean, there's something to be said in sports generally for guys who give it their all even when they're on a crap team. When they know they're not going to the playoffs, when they know they're not contenders for a ring, but they still give it 100%.
Mm-hmm.
That's more rare than people understand.
J.J. Watt.
Yeah, J.J. Watt. I mean, he's got a similar attitude, you know, just total professionalism, total competitiveness, you know, game by game, week by week. So many guys are in this business just get paid. Steve Smith is in there to make his mark on every single game. And I was worried when I found out he was going to be a Ravens receiver because that they got a tradition of doing it like that.
Yeah.
Over on that team, they know how to play the Patriots. I was really scared, and I was right because when we played the divisional game, Steve Smith burned Darrell Revis a bunch of times.
When he got that shot at revenge against the Panthers this last year, and then he went to the podium after the game, and I asked him how he thought he played. And he just goes, man, I ran through them boys like they were a bunch of schoolyard kids.
Dude,
and I was like, you are such a badass.
He's real, man.
He's so awesome. But, and that's the other thing is, it shows that these guys don't need to be these super intense individuals off of the field. That they can leave it. He's one of those guys that is able to leave that intensity
yep.
on the field. And he's not... Because he really took a shot at Panthers ownership. It's like, oh, so you're going to keep Greg Hardy around, but you're going to...
Oh, yeah. And it was 100% right.
And it was bullshit. And Cam Newton said it himself. Like, I still think Cam Newton has a lot of growth, you know, from a leadership standpoint. But he said that was clear by the day. Well, he said, I mean,
getting a fight with a cornerback.
I don't really look into that too much. Like, training camp skirmishes. Like, I guess I don't know the details of it.
Sherman got into a fight last training camp. I was going to say. You know, and nobody questions his team spirit.
Yeah, I know. But if you're a quarterback, you got to have a little bit better leadership skills than that. Especially at this point in your career.
If you don't know what was... I mean, we don't know what was said and how... You know, what was it?
Well, it was a dead ball play, but... The Panthers' defense has been coached to, when they recover the ball, to always try to score. So the cornerback intercepted Newton's pass and was running back to score, even though the call was blown dead. Cam tries to tackle him. The dude stiff arms him, and then Cam gets in his face and starts fighting him.
Well, we don't know what was said. I mean, it was clear that when he got up, they started scuffling.
Right, I'm so just saying, if you're like, Cam and you understand that if you're going for a tackle, he's not going to let you tackle.
It was a childish thing to do. Like, it's just
that you didn't need to. Like, you can like shove back and forth a little, but like Cam had the dude on the ground. Like, that's not what you need to do. That's besides the point. Right. We're talking about Steve Smith.
Right. But no, I mean, Steve Smith did a really nice job of checking Cam. Because a lot of people were on Cam for his body language and the way he carried himself after games when he lost in his sophomore slump. And Steve Smith was pretty vocal about being like, hey, man, like, you're the quarterback. We need you to be up. Like, you need to be up all the time. And I thought Cam showed great leadership being, like, he had to go through a lot of adversity last season, mm-hmm. being on a shitty team with no running game. It took a while for Kelvin Benjamin and him to find their chemistry. And dude, they really could have used Steve Smith last year. They probably would have won that division handedly in that week of a division as weak as it was. Yeah, if they would have had Steve Smith, they probably would have been able to take it to.
They were weak on the receivers. No,
absolutely.
Question.
So
yeah, I mean, just to conclude how I feel about it. Like, respect the guy a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Think he's, you know, I definitely want him on my team. I hope he has a horrendous final tour because I'm still scared of the Ravens. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, guy had a great career. Unfortunately, it mostly ended with him getting snubbed wrongfully, in my opinion.
For sure.
Especially by his head coach, who didn't say a goddamn thing.
It's like watching Paul Pierce on the, you know, the Nets and the Wizards. It's like, what's going on here, you know?
But,
and now the Clippers.
Now the,
But yeah, come 2016, the Ravens are going to have a lot of work to do with their receiving core.
They've already had a lot of departures, man. Like, I mean, ever since they won the Super Bowl, they had a shit ton of departures. But now they have more. Like, Nada's gone, and Torrey's gone. Steve Smith's going to be gone after next season. So.
A few years ago, Bolden was huge for them.
Yeah, Bolden left after that. Ray Lewis leaving. I mean, there was a lot of them that left.
And Owen Daniels isn't exactly a ball magnet these days. So
I don't know where he lists all time on, like, all time lists for receiving. I don't think he's the first ballot Hall of Famer, but would you guys consider eventually at some point Steve Smith making it into Canton? Again,
yeah,
just spitballing it. I don't know where he stands on
all-time
numbers.
I'd have to more deeply look at his stats.
I would probably say no.
Really?
Again, I have to look at the numbers, like, to be sure. But I mean, I doubt it. Like, he was never a league leader. He was a great, you know, great receiver and was very good for his
However,
team,
there so. Was that one year where him and Ocho were going back and forth with, like, touchdown
That's
dances.
True.
I remember Steve Smith was finding his way into the end zone quite a bit.
Yeah.
Can't remember what year that was, though. Yeah. I was just curious.
Mm. All right. Drew, why don't you take us into our main topic for the evening?
Okay.
Woo.
So, football's back. Everyone rejoice.
Thank Christ.
Thank God. I thought what we could do is, leading up to opening week, we could go maybe division by division from coast to coast, start on the west, move across the country, and basically just break down how we feel each division is going to shake up by the end of the season. We can give out our final standings, where we think each division is going to play out. One bust player from the division, one guy who's going to vastly underperform, and maybe one sleeper pick if you guys are feeling lucky. So,
all right,
how do we just want to start and go around?
Yeah, why don't we start with the first part of that?
Sure.
And I'll go around and just give your standings for the NFC West.
Excellent.
Start with you, buddy.
All right, so finishing number one in the NFC West, the divisional winner is going to be the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh!
I am predicting. Okay.
I think it's going to go Cards, then it's going to go Seattle Seahawks, then the St. Louis Rams, and then San Francisco 49ers.
Rebuilding.
I'm sorry, Steve. Yeah.
Rebuilding.
Draft year.
Yeah.
Krish, what about you, buddy?
Okay, so I think for me, this division is the story of the Seattle Seahawks. I got to go Seahawks 1, got to go Rams 2, Cardinals 3.
Interesting.
49ers 4th.
Okay. Steve?
Thanks, Steve. Cardinals going number 1.
Okay.
Seahawks number 2, Rams 3, and then Niners 4.
And then I wasn't exactly with Christian, but I was almost with you, buddy. Seattle finishes 1st, Cardinals 2nd,
okay.
Rams 3rd, 49ers 4th. Why don't we start with the Cardinals guys here, and why don't you give a little take on why you think the Cardinals are going
to
finish.
I seem to have a little less faith than you guys do.
Sure. Right off of the bat, they were pretty much steamrolling that division up until they hit quarterback purgatory. Not a lot changed offensively. I understand that Carson Palmer needs to come back from his third major surgery in his career. But yeah, I love that defense. That's the main issue for me. It's not necessarily, I'm not picking the Cardinals because I'm that much over Seattle than them. I still think Seattle is obviously well put together. I think the thing with Seattle is now they've taken their seasons all the way into February. I think that's going to cause a little bit of breakdown. Not just, physically, but also mentally. They've been grinding and grinding and grinding. I think the story for me is I think Seattle starts slow and then finishes strong, much the way they did last year. Mm-hmm. But I do believe Arizona has had things clicking on all cylinders for a while. Tyrann Mathieu is going to be a year older now, a year more experienced. Patrick Peterson, I still think, is the best cornerback in the NFL. He's my pick for best cornerback in the NFL. You missed Darnell Dockett, but you still have, what's his name, Calais Campbell on the outside. That guy's really freaking good, too. Didn't they bring in
Mike Iupati?
Yeah, Iupati on their offensive line. Their left side is stacked up offensive line. I love Andre Ellington.
I was going to say, that's good for Andre Ellington.
Absolutely. And in Andre Ellington,
that's the question mark.
I would say he's probably their ex-factor. I mean, outside of Carson Palmer and, if they can actually stay healthy at quarterback. But that's why I'm picking the Cards. St. Louis, I like. I just think offensively, you got Nick Foles running the show, and he fell apart, and he had more weapons last year in Philly than he will in Seattle this year.
In St. Louis, yeah.
So I just don't – I love all these defenses. Except for the Niners, the mean. But I – yeah, that was why I picked the Cards. Okay. Felt like they were rolling, and I don't know. I felt like had they not run into that snag, that was their quarterback issues.
Right.
Anything to add, Steve-O?
I think a big reason why there's going to be a lot of there's going to be a shitstorm in Seattle is because of that Super Bowl call. I think that really shakes that. I don't care what anybody says. Oh, we've moved on. That stays with you forever.
That's
going to haunt Pete Carroll until he's in the ground. That's going to haunt Russell Wilson until he's in the ground.
I agree.
I think that haunts everybody in that team to the point where they're going to not necessarily have so much trust and confidence in that coaching staff. I also think the addition of Jimmy Graham. What was the player did you say that had a beef with Jimmy Graham on the Seahawks?
Michael Bennett.
They all did. He got into a fight with all of them in that divisional round a couple years ago.
When
you get a guy like that on your side,
they know what they've got.
Yeah.
That's a weapon. It's not a
Michael Bennett. But that's what. But that's what he's saying is Michael Bennett didn't have any problem voicing how much he didn't want Jimmy Graham on the team. He said straight up, he was like, I don't want that dude here. I can't believe that we would get rid of our leader, Max Unger, to bring in a guy like Jimmy Graham, a quote-unquote bitch, is basically what he called him.
He didn't play offense, you know? Take care of your job, let Jimmy Graham take care of his.
Anyway, if Carson Palmer can stay healthy, that's a big question mark, I guess. But I think the Cardinals, what were they before shit really started to hit the fan? Like nine and one.
I was gonna say, didn't they get to 9 wins at one point? And they went to Seattle and won in Seattle. Yeah.
Those 9 games that they won were not like, you know, oh, we beat the Jaguars or we beat the fucking Bucks. You know, they beat some tough teams in their own houses. Yeah. So I think that trend's going to continue to go until this year. I think not only do they make it to the postseason, they could make it all the way to Super Bowl 50. I have that much confidence in, and I have that much confidence in Bruce Arians as a coach.
Two questions. First, it doesn't bother you at all that their already old receiving core is 1 year older?
Yes. It bothers me a lot.
Because it bothers me. That's why I went back and forth on this pretty much all day, because let's be honest, I'm not doing work at work these days. So I went back and forth on this all day, and when I got down to it, I just couldn't see a guy coming off his third major injury throwing to Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd, two guys past 30 who already didn't have, admittedly, the greatest years last year. They both had some good games, but overall,
I had Fitz, dude. It was terrible.
Fitzgerald is a shell of himself at this point.
And unfortunate.
For sure. Oh yeah,
he still can contribute some, like, occasionally, but those are your top two guys. That's what worries me.
Right.
And Andre Ellington has still really yet to prove himself. Like, it's just not.
And
I just don't know if it's an offense that can repeat the kind of success that they had last year. Can repeat that kind of success 2 years in a row.
Let me say one thing about that. I mean, you can dismiss this, you can agree with it, but remember when the Panthers landed Jaromir Jagr, and I was bitching because of how old he was, and then the guy just started tearing shit up.
And I told you to be quiet and respect what you had. And then
before, I was like, he's too fucking old. I can't believe we did this. And I said after that, after the first 5 games where he was just lighting shit up, I will never, ever question an athlete based on their age ever again.
For me, though,
Here's the thing for me.
It's not about age. The receivers have got another year on them. Like, I get that. I think they could be fine, not great. They definitely got a ceiling. For me, I'm worried about Andre Ellington. You're right. He hasn't proved himself, and he's dealing with injuries in training camp. I mean, that's never a good sign. Yeah. I mean, the running backs are the ones who will let you down with injuries more than anybody else. That's a problem. And lastly, I think losing Todd Bowles is a big problem. You know, that was
Do you think losing Dan Quinn's a big problem for Seattle?
Yeah, I do. Okay, but I think that the Seahawks defense has more weapons to work with across the board than the Cardinals do. So I think they can survive the loss of a coordinator a little bit more. Dan Quinn's a significant loss. I'm not going to knock that. But I think on the whole,
Max Unger.
Yeah, I get that. But you know what? I'm not sold on Max Unger being that important. Yeah, he's a center. He's a very good one. But I don't think that Max Unger is going to break them apart, especially when you consider that Jimmy Graham finally gives the Seahawks a receiving threat, a big-time receiving threat. Russell Wilson excels at throwing over the middle. That's all Jimmy Graham does.
But Graham's now going to have to do it
in the
not just that, but he needs to do it from the down spot instead of being out in the wing. I mean, they might put him in the slot or might put him out wide a couple times. I wouldn't be surprised. But in general, that's not really how Daryl Bevell runs his offense. He's never done that with tight ends before.
It's true.
And I'm not saying it's rocket science. I mean, if they're smart, they'll keep it simple because – he is still a beast, but he now needs to also prepare himself to block more than he ever has in his career.
Oh yeah,
and they already said
which means he's
going to
be taking more hits too.
Yeah, already said he's going to be blocking on probably 2/3 of.
And it could be smoke and mirrors,
but look,
I think it's not.
Here's the thing, though. I feel you're totally right. I'm not knocking any of that. I don't think that Jimmy Graham is going to be primetime Jimmy Graham at the peak of his powers here. Drew Brees could get him more throws, receptions, and touchdowns than Russell Wilson ever will.
Yeah.
But even like a 75% Jimmy Graham is still a huge weapon for Seattle. who just is not about throwing the ball.
And he'll always be a terror in the end zone. Like.
Right, exactly. And he's another guy they've got to account for. You know, him and Luke Wilson, you know, alternating, maybe going two tight ends. You know, that just opens up the whole thing for everybody else. I think the Seahawks are downright scary. And, you know, just addressing what you said, Steve, about that play, I think you're totally right. I think everybody remembers that they should have won the Super Bowl and they screwed it up. I think they're going to do exactly what the Ravens did after Billy Cundiff shanked his field goal. I think that they've got that in their genes. I think that motivates them. I think it's the Spurs after they blew Game 6 against the Heat. I think they've got the kind of character where they use it as fuel for the fire rather than a way to splinter the locker room.
Or the Packers in the NFC Championship.
I think the... I know the Packers are not in this division we're talking about. The Seahawks played the worst game of the last 2 years they've played, and they still couldn't beat the Seahawks. The Packers couldn't beat the Seahawks on their worst day. Are better.
So is that...
Period.
So just to move us along a little bit. What?
No, yeah, just, hey, babe. I wanted to ask a quick question, and it's a serious question.
Yeah. Okay.
What's worse? Losing after getting four picks, or losing after you had 2 14-point leads? Ravens versus Patriots, and we're talking about Packers versus Seahawks. What is the worst worst loss out of the
Packers Seahawks?
I'd say
Packers Seahawks is the worst loss.
Because it came within a shorter period of time.
The Patriots had a lot of time to make up those leads.
As a perennial expert in watching choke artists, I'm gonna have to go with the four, because you know I hate beating this dead horse, but if you look back to the 2009 NFC Championship game, the Vikings outgained the Saints by like 520 some yards to like 300 or something. Like we massively outplayed them statistically, except for one category. And we had four
fumbles.
Turnovers. We had three fumbles lost. And that one interception that sealed the deal. But it is so, and it is so much worse to lose that way. Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah.
Absolutely brutal.
Okay, so Christian, why are you picking the Seahawks?
Okay, so I mean, you know, in addition to the stuff that, you know, I've said before, listen, losing Dan Quinn and Max Unger, that's not something to shrug off. But I think they did get a net game by adding that weapon with Graham. You know, their offense lacked in weapons, especially for receiving. Jimmy Graham provides that for them. That's another guy you got to account for. Another, you know, that's another backer who's got to drop into coverage rather than Chase Wilson. So I think the Seahawks offense is going to be a lot better. I think Marshawn Lynch has got at least one more primetime year left in him. I think they're hungry. I think they've still got their defense almost entirely intact. I think their linebacker core is the best in the business. They've still got Thomas, they've still got Sherman, they still got Chancellor. I think they're really, really good. I think they're gonna be hungry for blood, and I'd be absolutely shocked if they got anywhere short of the NFC Championship game.
Now, you mentioned a name which almost caused me to flip to the Cardinals, just because I don't know how this is gonna play out. Chancellor's holding out right now.
I do know that.
How do you feel like that's going to affect it? Like, what if he misses all of training camp? What if they don't get a deal done and he holds out for games?
I'm saying this assuming that they're going to find a way to make it work.
Okay,
I'm not going to, like, you know, I understand that it could not, but, like, I can't account for, like, him going to some totally different team or whatever.
No, I'm not even saying that. I'm just saying, like,
can that happen?
I
don't think so.
No, but he can elect to hold out of games. He'll lose money.
Right.
He'll get fined.
$30,000 a game.
I think, I'd be stunned if they don't find a solution to it. I think they'll find common ground.
Yeah,
they'll probably give him a little more than they want to, but it's Cam Chancellor.
Yeah.
See, I disagree. I don't think it'll get worked out, at least not this offseason. I think Cam Chancellor will sit for the entirety of training camp and will pull basically what Marshawn Lynch did last offseason. In that he'll hold out, won't show up, wants to get paid, feels like he deserves to get paid. But when it's time to start rolling, we need to play football this season, Chancellor will show up, he'll do his job well, and I think next offseason he will be gone. I just don't think they might be able to make it work, but I think if I were a betting man, I would bet that Cam Chancellor would be like, you know what, I am one of the most valuable assets to this defense,
Absolutely.
And I deserve to be paid number one safety money, and I think the Seahawks are going to go, We already gave a lot of number one money to our cornerback and our quarterback and our running back. We don't have room for you. If they get a deal done, it'll be short term. It'll be like a Marshawn Lynch 2-year bet.
Listen, I'm with you on that. Like I think we talked about this in previous pods.
Oh no, we have
how the Seahawks are on borrowed time right here. Yeah, they're not gonna last.
They got probably one more good shot at
it. Yeah. Exactly, and that's why I have faith in them. I think this is their last shot.
Yeah, definitely.
This is it.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add to the Seattle argument. At the end of the day, like I'm playing devil's advocate with the Cam Chancellor thing. He will play one way or another, whether it's short term or long term. He'll go out there because he's a professional and he'll do his job. And he's one of the best safeties in NFL.
He's a baller.
So even at 75%, if he's sort of out of it mentally, he will still do a better job than most would in that position. Right. So.
He's not missing games.
No,
he'd kill his reputation if he missed games.
And I think he has a very, very, very good relationship with everybody in that locker room. Like Richard Sherman says that he understands. He's like he's just trying to do what's best for him and get paid.
Absolutely.
But they know as soon as 3-1 shows up, straps on the pads and the helmet, he's gonna ball and he's gonna be trying to blow guys up.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, regardless of what's going on the defensive end, which at the end of the day, you've still got the majority of your core already signed on and in training camp and ready and raring to go.
Right.
At the end of the day, you've still got beast mode.
Right.
And, man, a guy like him changes games.
Oh, yeah. And the offense, no matter what weapons they get receiving, like, it starts and stops with him.
Yep.
He pounds it. Everybody's got to account for that.
And you know what? I think it's a pretty close race. I think it might be like a 13-3 to like a 12-4, or like a 12-4 to like 11-5.
It'll be tight.
Like it's gonna be a tight race. I feel it.
And you're talking Cardinals.
Yeah. Talking top two, but I think Seattle pulls it out for sure.
Yeah. There's still that thing where once quarterbacks get paid big money, they kind of slump after that, don't they?
I don't know if Russell Wilson's got that in his genes. I don't think that's him.
They also don't. I understand what you're saying, but they also don't put the kind of passing workload on him as they do with a lot of other franchise quarterbacks. Case in point, you've got Marshawn Lynch. Like, he's going to get the ball 20 times a game. And plus, Russell can use his legs when he gets in trouble anyway, so he doesn't automatically have to throw to bail himself out. So I completely see what you're saying. I don't think it's the kind of situation that affects a quarterback like Russell Wilson, as it would to someone like if Drew Brees were 10 years younger, as it would to someone like a guy like Drew Brees who throws 40 times a game.
Right.
So, what's next, buddy?
Basically, yeah. Why don't we pick one bust from this division, one bust player, maybe a guy
I think
I've got a pretty decent one, but I'm curious to hear what your guys' picks are.
Yeah.
If you want, I can kick it off though.
Go ahead.
Oh, sure.
One guy who seems to be getting, and granted, this is all, I don't know. I guess just kind of looking at where I think the teams will place and where the arrows seem to be pointing. That's what really I've based this pick off of. I think Nick Foles will be a total bust. Total bust
agree.
In St. Louis.
We're going to have a talk about this then.
I don't think he looked fantastic in his first 9 games in Philly or something. Yeah, it was. He threw, 25 touchdowns and one interception or no interceptions.
Amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
And then defenses got the opportunity to watch some tape and figure out exactly what it is he can't do, which is be mobile. So they stopped biting on the read option stuff with LeSean McCoy. He had durability issues. Now he's in St. Louis, where he has significantly, fewer targets, like elite targets. Like, if you think Todd Gurley's going to pan out, more power to you. I really honestly can't make an assessment at this point whether he will or won't, but regardless, I've seen Adrian Peterson come in his rookie year and be an absolute dominating force, and we still only went like 8-8 and barely got into the playoffs.
Right.
And we had horrible quarterback play. It doesn't mean that if you have an elite running back that it's suddenly going to take a load off of your quarterback. I still think – I don't think Tavon Austin's that good. I think that also drives down Nick Foles' stock. I just think he
I got some stats.
He's a total bust.
I completely agree. This happily take that. This was my bust. I mean, Nick Foles, his 2014, granted he only played 8 games, but even if he had played 16 games at the average that he had, it would have been bad. Played 8 games, 13 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Double that for 16 games, 26 and 20. You like the touchdowns, but you hate the interception. Yeah, right. That's damn near 1-for-1. Right. That's bad news. Nice. That's bad news, Bears. And with a guy like Jordan Matthews, who's, in my opinion, already better than any of his top 3 options in the Rams. I just went 2 receivers and a tight end because those are Kenny Britt, Tavon Austin, Jared Cook. Last year, Britt had 48 receptions and 3 TDs. Austin had no TDs and 31 receptions. Cook had 51 and 5. So your best option is your slow-ass tight end, who I still don't think deserved the money that he got.
And their offensive line's not that good either. Nope. And so unless they can find a way to get Gurley to effectively back defenses off, you're going to have slow-ass Nick Foles sitting in the pocket getting crushed twice a year by the Cardinals and twice a year by Seattle.
And giving him an extension right off the bat,
that was
makes
dumb.
No sense to me. There's where I'll put your point, Steve. Quarterbacks getting their money before they're proven. That's what just happened with Nick Foles, and it's going to bite St. Louis in the ass. I guarantee fucking
it. Luckily, it's only a 2-year deal, so the hit won't be like a long-term thing.
It's not
but
Jim Cutler deal.
Here's my question for you guys. You guys are hammering Nick Foles here.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Do you think they upgraded or downgraded switching him for Bradford?
Downgrade. Slight downgrade.
With the injury-prone Bradford, I would say it's basically a wash.
Okay.
Because Bradford, I understand you got to get a quarterback that you can hope and think will stay on the field, but it doesn't matter if he's throwing 1-to-1 touchdown interceptions. Like, it's just, it's canceling itself out.
Right.
So,
I got that.
I think it was basically a wash.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going downgrade just because I think I think Bradford will have a better year this season. I think he'd just have a much...
Oh, if he can stay on the field,
much better
season. I am with you all the way. If he can stay on the field for 16 games.
And he's basically dealing with the same weapons for the most part that Nick Foles was dealing with last year when he was on the field. Yeah. Like, Shady's now gone, but you got DeMarco Murray, so you just went from an elite running back to an elite running back.
Right.
Just think. And you talk about the eye test. Bradford just passes the eye test for me as far as a quarterback goes over Nick Foles. Foles looked great, but I think it was just...
Bradford's more confident in the pocket. Bradford's bigger.
And I think Chip Kelly's system has a way of, you know... Like, Mark Sanchez looked great. Excellent. He looked awesome in his first game in an Eagles uniform.
Yeah.
He lit it up. But I think you get 1 week of tape, you watch this guy, and you go, okay, it's still just Mark Sanchez. Same thing with Foles. Like, holy shit, who's this guy bombing 25 touchdowns, not throwing a pick, and then you rewind it, and you're like, oh, wait, yeah, he's got, you know, Jeremy Maclin, DeSean Jackson, and Shady McCoy. Like, and now you're taking him. You lost Maclin, you lost Shady, and now you're in St. Louis.
Lost Jackson.
Yeah.
Dumpster fire.
No, I hear what you're saying. I mean, like, Foles has got something to prove. But personally, I mean, are we going with the other bust options right
sure,
now?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What are you guys? We were going to say, we got Foles.
Here's mine. And we're sticking with the quarterback theme here. Carson Palmer. Mm. I think Carson Palmer getting injured and having to go, you know, everybody talking about Stanton and Lindley resulted in Carson Palmer being heavily overrated. Acting as if, like, Carson Palmer could have led, like, a playoff charge for the Cardinals and get them to play the Super Bowl in their home field. No way. Like, Carson Palmer's not a bad quarterback, but he's not a good one either. He's completely average, and I think he's getting years and years on him now. I'm not sold on Carson Palmer. I don't think he necessarily can stay healthy for the full year. I'm with you, what you said, Tyler, about the receivers getting a little wear and tear on them. And if Andre Ellington can't stay on the field, then it's just going to be a completely one-dimensional offense. So I think Carson Palmer, people are going to think now that we got Carson back, we can make a run. And that sentence sounds ridiculous to me. I just think Carson Palmer has got, in his defense, inflated expectations just because of how the season ended without him.
Yeah.
But I think that Carson Palmer is going to let the Cardinals down. The Cardinals played really, really well at the beginning of last season. They fell apart. I don't think they're getting that form back.
So do you feel like the trajectory that that team took after Palmer bit it is the same exact trajectory? That they would have eventually...
No, not exactly. I think they're going to find somewhere in the middle. Like, they were... I don't think... Let's put it this way. They're not going to be as good as they were with Palmer last year. I thought that was just an anomaly for them. They played unusually well. But I don't think they're as bad as when they were playing with Lindley.
Okay.
I think they're somewhere in the middle. I think they're like a 9-7 team. Not bad, but not great.
Do you think so? Would you think the result would have been different if Palmer would have finished the season out? That they would have taken a first round exit.
Oh no! Look, with Palmer, you know, playing. I mean, again, like how many games did Palmer miss? He missed what, 6, 7?
I mean, I something like that. Half the season, pretty much. Yeah. They had played really well through 6 or 7 games and gave him a big deal.
If Palmer
and then he got
stayed, I think they would have finished second to the Seahawks. So the Seahawks got red hot. Nothing to do with the Arizona injuries. They'd have had the home field in the divisional round. I think they'd have beaten the Panthers. And then they would have lost to whoever they ran into. I think they would have won...
The Seahawks.
No,
I think it would have been Seattle.
Yeah, exactly. They would have won the wild card game, and then they would have lost to Seattle. So okay. I think, yeah, there is a little bit of difference there. But, yeah, I just don't buy the Cardinals as legitimate contenders. I think they could make the playoffs, but I doubt it. I see the Rams passing them.
Okay.
Especially because that Ram defense.
Steve-O, what you got?
You know, I mean, I hate to kind of ride with a, you know, train of thought here, but I mean, like, I've literally been sitting here the entire time trying to think of someone other than who you guys mentioned, but I can't. I think you guys are absolutely right. I think Nick Foles is the bust here. Mm-hmm. I really think so, because especially your case is so compelling. If you look at all the weapons that he had in Philly that are, you know, gone now, guys, this is embarrassing. Who's a receiver for the Rams?
I just named Kenny Britt, Tavon Austin, Jared Cook are his big three options.
When I think of the Rams, I think defense. That has nothing to do with Nick.
Oh, their defense is totally bad.
That's incredible. And now Todd Gurley.
I think their running backs are good too. That's why I'm buying Rams.
And
their receivers
are
not.
To be clear, I'm not saying that this automatically makes them a bad team, but I'm saying like Nick Foles as a quarterback for them already giving him money before he's ever taken a fucking snap. He's a bust for that team, regardless of how the rest of the team plays.
Jeff Fisher actually said after they signed him to the 2-year contract that now he's more relaxed. Isn't that kind of a problem? Like, I mean, you don't want your quarterback completely relaxed. You want him, like, don't you want a little bit of an edge to your quarterback to really worry about his job?
I was going to say,
you don't want him to panic, but just like.
You want him mentally relaxed, but.
You want him to fear for his job. You
don't
want him to compete for his job.
I don't think that's what he meant, though.
I see what you're saying. You don't want him to get comfortable before he's ever taken a snap for the team and think that this is his job for the next 3 years.
It's like,
years.
Oh, I got paid. I don't really have to worry about it.
I think what Jeff Fisher means is, like, there's just not a need to talk about contract stuff while he's trying to get used to a brand new offense and brand new teammates.
Right.
I think that's what he was saying. Not that, like, oh, now Nick Foles is just completely nonchalant about everything. Like,
no, that's not what I meant at all.
Calm and, like, lackadaisical.
Yeah.
No, that's not what I meant. It's just, like, in terms of the money, like, now that he is paid, I don't have to worry about, you know, the starting job, or I don't have to really worry about putting forth the hell of an
effort.
I'm
actually with Steve. I think
that is the case, then it goes with my point, which is saying that, like, that's why you shouldn't give an a
but so you're saying Nick Foles is in it for the money, he's not a winner.
No.
That sounds like what you're saying.
Okay, no, let me just clarify what I'm saying. Both of you gentlemen are right in your assessment that now that he has a contract, it isn't something he necessarily has to think about. I don't think he's being lazy and dicking off.
No, I don't think that.
But I think Steve makes a great point, and it's something that if I were the Rams, I would have done. He's a guy in transition who had one really, really great year that inflated expectations and then a dumpster fire that popped those expectations. Now he's in a new system, a new offense, and I think maybe this is unfair, but I personally would want to put pressure, a little bit of pressure on him and be like, listen, the book hasn't been written on you yet. You show us, because if they're going to give even half a season, if he would have showed, if even just be like, you know what, show us through six games what kind of starting quarterback you can be for this franchise, and then you'll get the money. By giving him the money now, I do think that there's a sense, like, I would want to give him a sense of urgency. I would want that. He didn't earn the money he got, I don't
That's
think.
Exactly what I'm saying.
No, I agree. Definitely hear that.
So I don't think he's, I mean, we were listening to the best of Mic'd Up on NFL Network. And there's some great sound bites as a leader from Nick Foles.
That's very
He was very fiery, very passionate. Yeah. There was a play in general where Darren Sproles got rolled over. It was very, very late.
Yeah.
And he was all over the ref about it. He was all over the other guys about it. I don't know enough about Nick Foles to say one way or the other if he's, you know, not a proven leader or whatever, anything like that. Like, I'm not a big follower of Eagles football, and I'm not I'm even less follower of the Rams, you know, football organization. I'm just saying, I would want, you want that kind of competition. You want a guy, especially at your quarterback position. Because that, I'm telling you right now, Christian Ponder felt no pressure whatsoever in his tenure as a Viking. And it didn't help.
No.
And they coddled the shit out of him. I don't think you don't want to coddle guys that haven't proven themselves.
You know what it is? It's pretty much like paying for food. Like, if you go to a restaurant, paying first before you get your food. Why am I paying for this if I don't know how it's going to, you know, turn out? It's gonna, that's what I'm trying to say here.
Another second-level metaphor from Steve. No,
I'm just like, seriously, why are you going to pay the guy top dollar for a service he hasn't provided?
And
you?
I don't think they give
and
him
it's top dollar.
Someone doesn't eat a lot of fast food, apparently.
It's a decent...
It's more dollar than you'd expect a guy who's made, what, 16 starts over two seasons?
Who had a horrible year the year before on an offense that was supposed to be awesome and really, really turn your head.
Yep.
And...
I don't get it. I really think he's the bust of this division without question.
I agree.
Surprises.
So you said you wanted to talk
sleepers
/ X Factors.
Yeah,
I went the X Factor route.
Sure, that's fine.
So
yeah, I guess the dude that I am picking, who I think is going to be a sleeper, and I think he's going to, and I think Steve would be happy to hear this. One guy that I really, really like is Torrey Smith.
Yeah,
I really, really like Torrey Smith. I actually think having him, back with his buddy, who he basically labeled his brother, his older brother from their Baltimore days, Anquan Boldin, I think that familiarity is definitely going to help things out. The one thing I feel like is I can say comfortably about the Niners, I don't think they're going to have a lot of problems running the football this year. I think Reggie Bush is going to be a great little scat bit, sort of like a Darren Sproles ordeal. And I think Carlos Hyde has really good potential to be their bell cow. Their in-between guy that's going to get 25 carries a game. Cap's got an arm. And it sounds like he spent all offseason working on trying to harness that arm and put a little bit more touch in the passes. Now you got a guy that can actually stretch the field and be a true, legit deep threat. I think Torrey Smith will actually have a very surprising year for the Niners.
Yeah, it's good news.
So that
he had damn good years of the Raven. That's
absolutely
sure.
And I just think I think like that this is something that Cap has needed for a while now, because teams aren't really, if they really want to keep him in the pocket the way that they did last year and want him running less, you need a guy that can stretch the field, because they had no, if you're going to do that, you got to have somebody that's going to stretch out the field. They didn't have a true deep threat, haven't had one.
Yeah.
The last few seasons. Haven't really needed one, but now I feel really, really do.
And who can rocket it down the field? That guy.
Cap kid. He's got a live arm. So yeah. I think Torrey Smith will have a very, very surprising year, and I wouldn't be surprised if he can, you know, given the circumstances, he could make a run at maybe hopping on a Pro Bowl team. So
we'll see.
Great.
Time will tell.
That was my sleeper, Torrey Smith.
Christian, what about you, buddy?
For me... to kill Steve's mood, my guy is Tyler Lockett. I think Tyler Lockett, just reading about what's been going on at training camp, apparently he's been really impressive. And let's face it, the Seattle receivers are appetizers.
To Chris Carter.
Chris Carter line. Yeah. Doug Baldwin can woof all he wants. He's not that great. They're fine. Him and Curse, whatever, you know? And I think that You know, people are going to account for Lynch. People are going to worry about Graham. There's a big, big opportunity for a legit receiver to just get a bunch of looks. And Tyler Lockett, I mean, he's got incredible speed. He's coming in with some hype. And I think that because there's already two weapons that people are going to continually account for, you know? When you're playing the Seahawks, it's like, contain Wilson. Don't let Graham get his over the middle. And you got to start out blocking Lynch. They're not accounting for those receivers. Yeah. You know, everybody's so used to just, like, you know, going one-on-one with the Seahawks receivers and letting them go. I think Tyler Lockett could surprise people.
It's a good pick.
So I go with that. That said, though, I mean, I love your Torrey Smith pick. Like, just, like, got to give a shout-out. I mean, Torrey Smith used to burn the Patriots, and that was brutal. He's very, very good. He's a good weapon for the 49ers, for sure. I think Tyler Lockett is the guy who people are going to be talking about.
I'm going to say something potentially, before we move on to your guys' picks, I'm going to say something that's potentially preposterous and just totally outlandish, but if you look at the receiving cores in the NFC West, I think the Niners' receiving core has the best chance of the teams in the division, have the best chance to challenge LOB.
I think you're right.
Well, let's recap. We got Torrey Smith. We got
Anquan Boldin.
We got Vernon Davis.
And my X factor was going to be a guy is a receiver that is apparently making huge noise in San Francisco.
Okay,
DeAndre White.
Yeah,
this is a rookie guy.
I don't know anything about him.
I had never heard of him.
Where's he coming out of?
Oh God, I can tell you.
We're getting at it.
But I had never heard of the guy. I think he went undrafted. We picked him up. I heard of him about a month ago. And he has been torching it. He's been torching every single cornerback. He's been getting open, making ridiculous one-handed catches. Cool. You know, in between traffic, they're saying no one knows who this guy is yet. Come the season, they're gonna know exactly who he is because he is a deep threat. He's a short threat. He's fast as hell. I've seen videos of him at training camp. He is so fast, and he's coming off an ACL injury as well. Yeah. So this guy, he's my sleeper piece. To be honest with you, no one's ever heard of the guy.
Alabama.
That's what Tom Sula calls him. Yeah, Alabama. So
5'11", ran a 4.4 40, got a 34.5-inch vertical.
Ooh,
yeah, man,
that sounds pretty good.
It's not too bad.
And that's the thing. I never heard of the guy. I never knew who the hell he was until a month ago when they were like, hey, you know, the 49er websites I go to, hey guys, you don't know who this guy is yet, but DeAndre White. Remember that name come September. Yeah. That's cool.
I mean, that sounds like great. I was just like. Hearing those descriptions, and I mean, like, listen, you know, I mean, he was catching balls from Blake Sims. I mean, it's not like he's catching it from a great quarterback.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, for me, it's just, like, I'm always hesitant with, like, Niner receivers just because of Kaepernick. Kaepernick's got a huge ceiling, and he's got a low floor. You know, we've seen what he can do when he's on. He's incredible when he's on. When he's off, he's horrible. So, it's just, it's...
When he's off, hopefully he's going to run.
Right, you know. Exactly.
Yes, I mean, we saw
hopefully
what
they let him.
They said that.
Good.
After what happened last year, I mean, when you have a quarterback that you're forcing option, to be something that he's not, it's like
just obnoxious.
Oh yeah, and listen, if they can open up options with that, no pun intended, open up options. It's just then I would totally give the DeAndre White thing. I mean, that's if they're not checking the throw like they should because they're so scared of the run. Boom, there it is. But I'm just not sure.
Let me say something else about Cap that actually kind of disturbed me. And obviously I wasn't there, but apparently Kurt Warner told him something that I was not looking forward to hearing. He said, if you really want to become a pocket passer, I need you to really focus on making passes that you really in the back of your mind don't think you can make. You need to work on your accuracy. What he's telling him is don't take off and run. If no one's open, don't take off and run. Find someone that could get open. That's what I heard. They're saying if you really want to become a pocket passer, pocket passers don't. I mean, pocket passers don't take off and run. They just don't.
But it was bizarre
to me. It's like
he shouldn't be a pocket passer.
But that's what like I was like that was part of the whole problem
he's
last
not
season.
Built to be a pocket. Yeah, passer.
That was the whole thing. It's like, but apparently Cap told him he's like, I really really want to become a pocket passer because I know that's going to extend my career. Ugh. The more times I run, the more times I'm going to get hit.
Use your tools, man.
But here's the same thing too. You take off and run, you're going to get hit. But guess what? You can get sacked staying in the pocket. You're gonna get hit either way, man.
Especially against the defense you're gonna be playing most of the time.
And look what happens when he runs against the Legion of Boom and the Rams. You can't catch him, man.
Oh,
if he's got an open lane, you can't catch him.
Oh yeah. No, here's my thing, and this goes back to, you know, just for a moment about the Kurt Warner training Colin Kaepernick thing. I always thought that was a bad idea. I just felt that they didn't match up with their styles. It's when Hakeem Olajuwon tried to train Dwight Howard. It's like that's not your game. You know, like, Hakeem Olajuwon is all about the versatile post moves, and Dwight Howard just doesn't have a post move to save his life. Colin Kaepernick is a mobile quarterback. He can burn you with his legs first and foremost. That's what you're worried about. Kurt Warner was a pocket passer. I mean, he can scramble a bit. But, like, that, it just doesn't match up for me.
And you look at, I mean, and not
yeah,
a knock.
It was not
a knock on Kurt Warner, but you look at the receiving corps in the offenses he got to play on when he won Super Bowls. I mean, in St. Louis, he had friggin'
Marshall Faulk,
Isaac Bruce,
yep.
Torrey Holt, Ricky Prohl, forgot about him. Like, greatest show on turf. Cap has never had that.
No.
Ever. No. I mean, and even again, when they had their glory run in St. Louis and they got to the Super Bowl and lost to the Steelers, Anquan Boldin and Larry Fitz were in the primes of their careers.
Right.
Warner looked terrible in New York when he was a Giant.
Keep forgetting.
I mean, that was a horrible stint. Everybody thought his career was dead before he found his way back onto the field in St. Louis, in Arizona.
Yep.
So, yeah.
We have a new fourth host, by the way.
We do.
Steve Cravens has been replaced by my girlfriend's sleeping cat.
My man.
What's up, buddy? Want to talk on the mic?
Percy thinks the Rams are going to win the division.
Is that kind of diva attitude why we won't bring you on?
You know what? You're being replaced. You're just being replaced. Yep, see? Steve's coming back. No. He's replacing him.
I know.
Damn.
That's what happens when you leave
this
the
character
in the show.
Exactly.
Dude.
Percy will take
he
your
will
spot.
Take your okay.
That was a hot sports take, Percy.
Good job, buddy. Thanks.
Darnell Dockett, runner-up, by the way.
Yeah, that's another good one, too.
All right, so I went... I didn't talk about sleepers, but...
X-Factors.
I talked about X-Factors for each team in this division.
Todd Gurley.
I'm going to start from the bottom going up. So,
sure.
49ers. The X-Factor, we know how banged up... Well, how minuscule the defense is right now. We know the receiving core is really talented, but they're not exactly spring chickens anymore.
Nope.
No.
With
no,
the
not.
Exception of, I guess, if you want to say
Davis
Torrey Smith.
And Bolden.
DeAndre White.
Yeah. And Ellington. Their running game is completely unproven. The 49ers' X factor is Cap.
Yeah.
That's
always
like, plain and simple. The play starts and ends with him. And if he doesn't have a bounce back season, admittedly, probably bad season is just going to turn that much worse.
Yeah,
he's gotta improve his touchdowns to interceptions ratio. He's gotta be able to take off and run. They've gotta give him the plays and let him be able to take off and run.
Oh, he's calling the plays now.
Okay,
which is
well
something
that
you never did before.
That even adds to my point. If he's not doing the right stuff before the play and during the play and after the play, that 49ers team is just going to be more in shambles than they already are. So, I mean, I don't think there's anyone you can point to at this point that needs to play better than Colin Kaepernick.
I would agree. I would also say he can – I love his athleticism, and he can work all he wants on improving his touch passing and the deep ball and that sort of deal. But – straight up, most of his growth is going to need to come between the ears. Like, I mean, if he's really going to need to get better, he needs to be a better decision maker.
Right.
He needs to stop being like, I mean, be honest with you, the guy he probably should have tried to work out with Brett Favre. Because they have more of
that sort of aspect of it.
Like, so, I mean... It's going to
need
to be.
Brett Favre only works out with high school kids.
This is
though,
true. So. This is true.
I would have picked Steve Young
but,
if Steve Young was willing.
I suppose
he's mobile.
I mean, that's
play
true.
Play for the Niners. Wants to actually help a 49er.
Yeah.
Kurt Warner, a former Cardinal and Ram, is helping out a Niner.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
Hey, don't forget arena football.
See how it goes. But he needs to be a better decision maker. He can be better with the touch passing and the deep ball all he wants, but it's not going to matter if he doesn't know. Yeah. If you can't recover,
but you know, and that actually, you guys are right, because you know what? Now there's really no excuse, because if they're really letting him run when their like shit falls apart, if the pocket falls apart. But here's the other thing: you're being allowed to call your own plays now. You go to you show up. That's another thing that they apparently worked on was reading defenses. So hopefully he got better at that. But he has the power now to call his own plays in the huddle.
And goddamn it, slide. Get down when you're running. Don't take any hits, for Christ's sake. Just slide.
All right. For the Rams, plain and simple, it's their defense.
Yup.
We don't need to talk about it. We beat this horse to death, but no one, I don't know how you could be convinced on Nick Foles in that receiving core.
Nope.
I can't be convinced one way or another on Todd Gurley right now because he hasn't played an NFL down and he's also coming off a major injury. You hope that that running game is going to open things up, and you hope that Nick Foles is going to play like he played for those first eight games with the Eagles right. in 2013. But at the end of the day, the defense is going to keep you in games just like it kept you in games last year.
Right. And I'll add this. I'm with you. I think question is also Trey Mason. Like, yeah, he showed some flashes last year. If he makes a bit of a step in his sophomore season, that's a big plus for them.
Big plus, yeah. But, yeah, I just think at the end of the day, the defense is what won that team games last year, and it's what's going to win that team games this year.
For sure.
No question.
Cardinals, it's Carson Palmer's health. That's the X factor.
Yeah.
I can basically make the same argument I just made for the Rams. It's like a healthy Carson Palmer is what got them to 9-1, or, well, like, what do you want to say? Like 7-0, I think, before he got injured?
I mean, something like that. Because they actually played some pretty effective games. Like, wasn't Stanton's first game actually pretty solid?
He actually played pretty decent. Well, let's put it this way. They got to the playoffs because Carson Palmer played a fantastic first half of the season before he got injured. And at the end of the day, they squeaked in the playoffs and then lost in the wild card. Because they didn't have Carson Palmer under center. Whether you think Palmer is going to have a bounce-back season, like a great season or not, he's still that veteran leadership under center, and you don't have enough other proven guys on that offense that can really handle the kind of workload as a leader that he's going to have to handle.
That's true.
Carson's healthy. I think they get back to the wild card. Carson's not healthy. They don't go to the playoffs.
I think that's all correct, and I think his health is definitely the X factor. I just want to throw out one name, and I just want you guys to tell me whether you think he's legit or not. John Brown had some pretty solid games for the Cards out of the slot playing receiver. Mm. Did he not?
I guess. Nothing stands out to me about that dude. So you might have better info than I do, but I don't remember him being that particularly that interesting.
Because I thought like he was like developing as a sort of a sleeper target for a while, a couple consecutive weeks, because guys were locking in on fits and that sort of thing.
I guess he did. I guess he just didn't stand out for me week to week, but I do remember like a lot of like fantasy talk.
Yeah.
After they started,
I mean, him in the slot. I mean, I would say that he could be a sleeper. I guess he only had he was a rookie last year, right?
Yeah.
I guess he only had 5 touchdowns, so not that particularly.
It's better than any fucking receiver on the Rams had.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. He caught the game winner against Philly. That 75-yarder. That's why I remember him.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he...
That's an interesting name to look out for. I played
16 games. He had 48 receptions, 696 yards. He averaged 14.5 yards per reception.
Not bad
and
5
touchdowns.
Yeah, not bad for
so,
a rook.
And okay. Given the fact that they were sort of pseudo-shuffling around quarterbacks down the stretch there... Yeah.
Right.
Maybe if you can get some consistency going into training camp. Makes sense.
And finally, Seattle. I mean, come on. It's Marshawn Lynch. Lynch is the X factor.
Love that, dude.
X factor.
Yeah. The defense still needs to... The LLB still needs to be on their game as always, but Marshawn Lynch is... still the guy who's going to be scoring those touchdowns when you need him.
Right.
He's still going to be that workhorse that he was last year, even after everyone somewhat slept on him coming off an injury. No one, myself included, thought he was going to be nearly as good as he was last year. And I just think he's even better this year than he was last year.
I love that, dude. So your definition of X-Factor kind of differs from mine, because like, for me, X-Factor is like the one you can't predict as much.
Like the true definition of X Factor, if you look it up, is the person who is going to be the biggest make or break
for your
team.
That's what I thought it was.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's like MVP.
I guess to a degree.
Because I always thought like X Factor is like could like change it up a bit by just being unpredictable. Like
they change it up whether like if they're great, then that helps your team to success. If they're bad, then your team fails.
Oh no, totally for sure. I thought they threw in like predictability as well in the X Factor. I'd be shocked if Marshawn Lynch is anything short of awesome. You know,
right?
It's Graham because Graham could screw it up and waste money for them, but he also could add a whole new dimension.
But he's not the reason. If they go back to the Super Bowl, he's not the reason that they do. Like, Marshawn Lynch, to me, is one of the main reasons they got to the Super Bowl last year, and one of the reasons if they were to go to the Super Bowl.
So X-Factor is most important factor. Yeah.
Yep.
For me, it's like following the algebra rule of just, like, you don't know what this value is.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, no, I'm not, like, arguing. I'm just saying, we're approaching this differently.
Gotcha. Marshawn Lynch, we don't need to spend any time on.
Oh, yeah, he's clearly the most important, no question.
I guess the only thing I would add to it, the reason why, you know, I know a lot of people are sort of not ripping Seattle there are a lot of people that are going after Russell Wilson saying he's not worth the money that he's being paid. But there is one thing that Russell Wilson can do, and Marshawn Lynch helps with that. He can read option the shit out of defenses.
Right. Yep.
I mean, and he's doing it much better than any other quarterback in the league, which sucks because Colin Kaepernick could be that quarterback. Like, the way they used Kaepernick his first season, that's
pure genius.
It's great. But for whatever reason, they didn't even try to go back to it last season.
So weird.
And
after
Seattle just shows...
contract he signed.
And that's the thing, is Seattle just shows, like, they don't give an S. Like, they're going to run the read option because it works and they get some points.
To be fair, I think Wilson, and you guys can check me on this, I think he's a little more durable than Kaepernick, like putting him out in the field just because of his build.
Because he's smaller?
More compact.
Like, I also think he makes the better.
Kaepernick's like taller and leaner.
Caps, Russell. Really, yeah, I think Cap's got like 5 inches on him.
Oh, yeah,
he's
way taller. He's slender. Yeah.
I don't know. I think the one thing that Russell Wilson does that Cap doesn't really do is he doesn't really protect his body. Like, Cap doesn't have any regard for, he'll lower the boom when he shouldn't.
Right.
Well,
Russell Wilson
will slide
IQ
or roll down.
Player.
Exactly.
Or run out of bounds.
So, but yeah. I think Kaepernick has the ability and the durability, to be honest with you, to do those kinds of things. I just think that the Niners, for whatever reason, are terrified to let him be that guy.
Well, let me say something just for my own personal, like, just to get my moods back up. Jeep Chris, OC for the Niners now, former quarterback coach for Cap.
Hey.
Okay.
So there's a guy who knows his strengths and also knows his weaknesses. And I'm really, really hoping that with all the shit that's happened where they realize, like, we really need to rely on our offense not to really put the points up because the defense isn't going to bail. I mean, who knows? Maybe it will. But signs are pointing to the defense is not going to bail us out of certain situations that they did 2 seasons ago. So I'm really hoping with Jeep Christ working with Cap all these past seasons, now the offensive coordinator is going to start calling some plays, read option, you know, letting him scramble, you know, playing more to his strengths as opposed to, you know, let's try to turn you into something that we know you're not, especially seeing how it went last year.
Right.
So that's what I'm hoping.
Okay. Guys, we got to get out of here. We've been at this for a long time.
Football!
Football's back.
Yeah.
We're going.
What are we going after next week? What division?
I was thinking we could stay with the West Coast and do the AFC West.
Perfect.
And then we'll move on to the Central Divisions.
Sounds good.
It's going to be more fun to talk about, I think.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of X-Factors.
Yeah.
That division, yeah. I guess you're right.
All right. Well, this was fun. Guys, I just want to break it down for a minute.
Okay.
To the thousands of ladies that listened to our sexiest episode ever last week.
Yes!
I just want to apologize. I know this week wasn't quite as sexy as last week was.
Football pads will do that.
Football pads will do that. I promise you that we will get back to the sexiness after we finish these divisional previews.
So not for a while.
Well, like 5 weeks, we'll be back to it.
A lot can happen in 5 weeks.
Maybe if my
sexy
voice doesn't crack when I'm
trying
to talk.
I'll look up some good football
happens
wags and I'll, you know, pump it up.
Fair enough, man.
I mean, I got a lot of emails from lady fans that they were just super upset, man. They're super, well, That doesn't. They were super
hot and bothered.
Hot and bothered.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if they're disappointed in this podcast, I got a website for you, xnxx.com.
Don't. We don't get paid for that.
Plugging pornos.
We don't.
Have we? I thought we just gained a couple listeners, guys.
Steve, you can't plug things like that. We don't get paid for that yet.
All right, well, let me unplug it.
So you're.
Tune into the 51 yard line.
Oh, there you go.
Ooh. Now that was kind of sexy.
Yeah, you're an XNXX guy. I would have pegged you for a Pornhub guy.
You're not a U-Porn guy?
I go everywhere.
I'm all over the map.
My boat goes into many ports.
God. Yes.
Goodness.
I hope this is like the episode where my parents just like they just skip the last off 3 minutes rails. Of the episode.
They don't give a shit about the NFC West.
They give a shit about our podcast.
They care about you and your well-being.
All right. Well. Yeah.
Okay.
Well.
Go
Christ.
Niners.
Yeah. Go
anyway.
Rah rah.
For Steve Cravens.
Thank you for listening.
For Christian Schneider.
Thanks for stopping by.
For Drew Willers.
Football's back, baby!
I'm Tyler Berry. See y'all next week.